From the world of Percy Jackson, The Sun and the Star, a Nico D'Angelo adventure, written by Rick Riordan and Mark Oshiro, narrated by A.J. Beckles. To all the Nicos, Wills, Pipers, and everyone in between, this is for you. May you shine as bright as the sun and the stars. Nico D'Angelo, why don't you tell me a story? Nico bristled at that. A story? Any old story? That seemed too easy after everything they'd been through. After all the suffering. He looked to Will, briefly, and his boyfriend arched an eyebrow. He looked tired. Too tired. And his bandages. Nico's stomach rolled. The gauze strips were soaked through with blood again. He turned back to Gorgira. A story about what? He asked. The nymph examined Nico's face, then Will's. Was she going to pull soul threads out of them again? Nico felt something brush his knuckles. He glanced down and saw that Will was trying to hold his hand. He opened his fingers and let Will slip his in between. Nico's heart sank. Will's grip was very weak. Nico had to do this. He had to finish what they had started. The whispers called out to him. And then Gorgira did too. Tell me about the two of you, she said. Chapter 1. Nico faced the worst decision of his life, and he was certain he was going to mess it up. I can't do this, he said to Will Solace, the stunningly beautiful son of Apollo, who stood across from him. But it was Austin Lake, one of Will's half-siblings, Nico chose to focus on. He was pacing behind Will, which only made Nico more nervous. Stop moving, Austin, said Nico. I can't concentrate. Sorry, dude, said Austin. This is just so stressful. You gotta choose, Will said to Nico. Those are the rules. Nico frowned. I'm the son of Hades. I don't live by most rules. But you did agree to these, said Kayla Knowles, another child of Apollo. She twirled a cherry lollipop in her mouth. Are you a demigod without honor, Nico D'Angelo? Austin kept pacing. To be fair, I don't think this task requires any actual honor. Quiet, said Nico, running his hands through his hair. What if he made the wrong choice? Would Will be disappointed in him? But studying Will's face, Nico saw only anticipation. The good kind. Will was ready for whatever Nico would say, and no matter how this ended, Will would still think just as highly of him. What did I ever do to deserve him? Nico wondered. He asked himself that question a lot. Okay, I've made my decision, said Nico. I might explode, said Austin. The world might end, said Kayla, now holding the lollipop at her side, her eyes bright with anxiety. Like, actually end this time? So, said Nico, if I had to choose... Yes, prompted Will. You would choose? Nico took a deep breath. Darth Vader. Will and Kayla groaned, but Austin looked like Nico had just given him a Ferrari as a birthday present. Dude, Austin screamed, that is the best answer. It is the worst answer, said Kayla. Why would you choose Vader when Kylo Ren is right there? I was hoping for a deep cut, Will mused. Maybe someone like General Grievous or Dryden Voss. Hold on, said Nico. I just finished watching all those movies yesterday. I can barely remember what happened in the prequels at this point. He paused. Were those all actual characters in Star Wars, or are you joking? Don't distract from your truth, Nico, said Kayla. Darth Vader? You'd go on a date with Darth Vader? She crunched on her lollipop. I've lost all joy, Nico. All of it. Welcome to my world, Nico joked. He caught Will grimacing, a brief flicker of one, but he still caught it. This is a safe space, said Austin. No judgment allowed for our answers, remember? I take it back, said Kayla. It's an all-judgment space. You're very quiet, Will, said Nico, especially as the number one Star Wars fan in the group. I'm considering all the reasons why you'd give that answer, he said. You might be onto something. He's powerful, said Nico, and decisive, added Will. He'd always know exactly where to go for your date. No arguing about that. Does he take off his helmet to eat? Said Kayla. Nico laid his hand over his heart. Imagine Darth Vader removing his helmet over dinner and then staring longingly into your eyes over the table. Now that is romance. Will laughed hard, then flashed that brilliant smile of his. Why, oh why, did it feel like such a victory to make Will laugh? For a long time, Nico had assumed he himself did not have a heart. He was the son of Hades, after all. Love didn't find people like him. But then came Will. Will, who could melt Nico's iciness with a smile. Anyone could have guessed which god was Will's father. He radiated energy and light, sometimes literally, as they had learned in the Troglodytes' caverns earlier that year. Will was Apollo's son, through and through. Maybe that whole saying about opposites attracting was true, because Nico didn't know a single person who was more his opposite. Despite that, they were coming up on a year. A year together. Nico had an actual boyfriend. He still wasn't sure he believed it was real. The four demigods continued their walk through Camp Half-Blood. There was no fire burning in the amphitheater. Maybe since it was starting to cool down on Long Island, Nico and Will would light one tonight. No campers were rushing off to the armory or the forge. No one was visiting the cave of the Oracle. The cabins were empty, aside from Hades and Apollo's. And that was the clearest sign summer was over. Nico didn't want to admit it out loud, but he was going to miss, well, pretty much all the campers, even though it was at times exhausting to be one of their counselors. He especially didn't want to say goodbye to Kayla and Austin. As they passed through the strawberry fields, Nico sensed Kayla's and Austin's tension growing. They'd had to make a difficult decision about their travel arrangements earlier that day, and as the four of them climbed Half-Blood Hill, Kayla and Austin slowed. I'm thinking that maybe we should have chosen differently, said Kayla. You sure we'll be fine, Nico? Asked Austin. Yeah, he said. I mean, no one has ever died or anything. That's not nearly as comforting as you think it is, said Kayla. You'll be okay, said Will, and he put his hand on Austin's shoulder. I've heard it's chaotic, maybe a bit nauseating, but you'll make it home safely. They reached the summit of the hill where the golden fleece glittered on the lowest branch of the pine tree. Below, Farm Road 3.141 curved around the base of the hill, defining the outer border of camp. On the gravel shoulder next to a pile of boxes and duffel bags stood Chiron, the Camp Half-Blood Activities Director, his equine lower half gleaming white in the afternoon light. There you are, the centaur called out. Come along then. None of them hurried. It was obvious to Nico that Kayla and Austin weren't in a rush to leave camp. Most everyone else had already returned to their normal lives. Except, well, what was normal for someone like Nico? Epic battles. Constantly facing the threat of defeat and death. The dead talking to him. Prophecies. The voice from his dreams bubbled up inside him again now. Calling out for help. Rachel Dare's words haunted him too, Only he and Will had heard what the Oracle had prophesized a few weeks ago, and Nico hadn't shared it with anyone else yet, not even the other counselors. Why should he? It hadn't warned of any doomsday threats to Camp Half-Blood. The world was, as far as he knew, safe for now from angry gods or rebellious titans. Resurrected maniacal Roman emperors were no longer a thing to worry about. The prophecy merely concerned that lone voice in his dreams, begging for help. Specifically, Nico's help. "Some of the satyrs collected your things," said Chiron, as the four demigods joined him at the road. "They wish you well on your journey."
"We might need it," Kayla grumbled. "Chiron, just tell us the truth. The Grey Sisters aren't going to kill us, are they?"
"What? No." He looked aghast. "At least, they haven't killed anyone so far."
"You and Nico," cried Austin, throwing up his hands. "Both of you think that's an acceptable thing to tell us?"
Chiron's smile lines crinkled around his eyes. Now, you're demigods, you'll be fine. Try tipping them a few extra drachmas at the start of the trip, though. I've heard that helps make the experience less intense." He fished in the pocket of his archery vest, pulled out a golden coin, and threw it into the road. "Stop, O chariot of damnation." No sooner had Chiron finished speaking than the taxi arrived. It did not putter or cruise up to the group. It appeared. The coin sank into the pavement. Tendrils of dark smoke curled upward. The asphalt twisted, and the Grey Sisters' taxi erupted into being. It looked like a taxi, all right, but its edges swirled and wafted if you stared at it too long. Nico had heard all about Percy's, Meg's, and Apollo's experiences with this particular mode of transportation. They'd repeatedly told him that they even preferred his shadow travel to the bumpy, vomit-inducing nightmare that was riding in that car. The Grey Sisters had a long history of detesting heroes, and at this point, they viewed every inhabitant of Camp Half-Blood as a potential hero to be detested. Nico didn't want to admit it to the others, but he had met the sisters several times on his own. And he kind of liked them. They were thorny, difficult, stuck in their ways. Chaotic yet weirdly dependable, they wore their darkness on their sleeves. For Styx's sake, they all shared a single eye. How could Nico not appreciate them? The sisters were in the midst of an argument as one of the rear doors swung open. "I know exactly what I'm doing, Wasp," said the old lady sitting shotgun, her stringy gray hair swaying over her face. "When have I ever not known what I'm doing?"
Oh,
screeched Wasp, who sat up front in the middle. "That's lush. That's a real lush opinion, Tempest." "Do you even know what lush means?" Tempest shot back. The driver groaned dramatically. "Are you two children? Will you please stop talking?" Tempest threw her hands up and put on her best imitation of the driver, which confused Nico since they all sounded identical. "Oh, my name is Anger. And I'm so mature." "I will eat the eye," warned Anger. "I'll do it." "You wouldn't," said Wasp. "With salt and pepper and a little paprika," Anger threatened. "I'll do it."
"Hi," said Austin, hoisting his saxophone case. "Is there any way you could pop the trunk? We have some luggage."
All three Grey Sisters spun toward Austin and spoke in unison.
"No."
They fell back into arguing. Nico decided right then and there that these were his favorite people in the whole world. Still, he sympathized with Kayla and Austin. As Chiron worked to open the trunk, both demigods looked more frightened than they ever had in the last year.
"You sure you don't want me to shadow travel you to Manhattan?" Nico offered.
Will sighed.
"Nico, you can't use shadow travel like public transportation. It'll drain you dry."
"It's okay, Nico,"
Kayla said, sounding like she was trying hard to believe it.
"We'll be fine.
Plus, we're going to different places," said Austin. "My mom's meeting me uptown. I actually got into an academy up in Harlem, and she found an apartment for us close by."
"Sounds like a good place to end up," said Will. "Not too far from here."
"And there's so much history in Harlem to explore," added Austin. Apparently, one of the clubs where Miles Davis used to play has reopened.
Nico nodded half-heartedly. He had no idea who that was. It was one of the downsides of not being in the human world for very long.
What about you, Kayla? Asked Kyren, loading her archery gear into the trunk.
Back to Toronto, she said. Dad wanted me to come home, and it's actually been a while. I'm pretty excited, to be honest.
Her eyes glinted.
Especially to prove that I'm now better than him at archery.
Austin turned to Nico and Will.
So, you two are really staying here?
Nico hoped Will would answer first. The sun falling behind the western hills made Will's curly blonde hair look like it was aflame. For a moment, Nico wondered if Will was using his glow-in-the-dark power. Either way, it made Nico a little annoyed.
Why did Will have to be so beautiful all the time?
I think we are, said Will, taking Nico's hand. Mom's touring for her new album this fall, and I don't know if I want to bounce around the country in the back of a van.
Could be fun, said Austin. I hope I get to travel because of my music one day.
Kayla nodded.
I wonder what it would be like to see other places without worrying whether some murderous statue is going to kill you.
Oh, come on, said Nico. Where's the fun in that?
Are you going to get in the car? Tempest growled. Or are you paying us to listen to your boring conversation?
She was hanging out the window with an open palm extended toward them. Austin paid her with 3 drachmas, tipping her heavily as Kyren had suggested. Tempest examined the coins for a moment. Nico didn't know how, as she had no eyes behind that thick gray curtain of hair, then grunted. She pulled herself back into the car.
Get in, she said.
There were quick hugs and cheek kisses, and then Austin and Kayla climbed into the back seat of the Gray Sisters' taxi. All the while, the sisters continued to argue. Kayla looked around the cab.
We've been on worse adventures, she said to those outside the car.
Have we? Asked Austin.
Anyway, hope to see you soon, said Kayla, and don't get into any trouble, you two.
Austin leaned across Kayla to poke his head out the window, a mischievous excitement on his face.
But if there is trouble,
Will waved at them.
You'll know, promise.
Be safe yourselves, Kyren called out.
Drive, Anger, drive, screamed Wasp. Isn't that what you do? Honestly, why do you even sit in that seat if you don't?
Her words were lost as the taxi jerked forward and disappeared in a blur of gray.
Yep, Nico loved the sisters.
So that's it, said Will.
They were the last, weren't they?
Indeed, said Kyren. Aside from some of the staff, the satyrs, and the dryads, Camp Half-Blood is actually empty.
The old centaur sounded a bit lost. As far as Nico could recall since he'd started coming here, this was the first time that there were no demigods present, aside from him and Will, that is.
This is weird, said Nico. Really weird.
A lot has happened over the past few years, said Kyren wistfully. I understand more than ever why campers would want to go home to be with their families or to see the world.
I guess, said Nico.
Now, gentlemen, said Kyren, dusting off the front of his vest. I've got a meeting with Juniper and the Dryads about tree rot. Exciting stuff, I assure you. I'll see you at dinner.
They nodded, then waved as Kyren galloped off.
So, said Nico, what do we do next?
Will, still holding Nico's hand, guided him back up the hill.
Well, we don't have any monsters to slay.
Boo, I could raise a skeleton army to perform a choreographed dance. I bet I could teach them single ladies if you like.
Will chuckled. We don't have any Roman emperors to locate and dethrone either.
Nico flinched.
Don't remind me. If I could go the rest of my life without even thinking Nero's name again, I'd be happy.
That's a funny joke, said Will as they reached the summit.
What is
you, said Will, being happy? Nico rolled his eyes.
My grumpy little ball of darkness, added Will, poking him in the ribs.
Ew, gross, said Nico, dancing away from him.
We are not making that a thing. Did you already forget that I was once your, and I am quoting you here, Nico, significant annoyance? Oh, you're still that, said Nico. And then Will was chasing him down the hill, back into camp. In that moment, Nico allowed himself to enjoy the sensation. Will was right. There were no threats whatsoever on the horizon. No big bads, no lurking demigod traitors, no hidden monsters waiting to destroy Camp Half-Blood. But then, dread prickled across Nico's skin. His body was warning him, wasn't it? Don't get too comfortable, it was telling him. He's waiting for you in Tartarus. Or have you forgotten about him like everyone else did? Maybe this period of rest wasn't such a good thing. If Nico didn't have some terrible monster or villain to fight, then what excuse did he have to ignore the voice any longer? The truth was, he couldn't ignore it, even if he wanted to. He'd been visited by so many ghosts over the years. The dead wanted to be heard, and who better to listen to them than the son of Hades? But this voice, it did not belong to someone who had passed on, and Nico had never heard someone sound as desperate for help. So his mood was muted by the time he and Will made it to the dining pavilion after stopping by their cabins to freshen up first. It felt strange to be in this place that was normally so alive. Now there were only a few staff dryads and harpies spread unevenly around the various tables. The camp director, Dionysus, Mr. D, to all of them, was lounging at the head table with Chiron, who had somehow beaten them to dinner. The two administrators were so deep in conversation that they barely acknowledged Will when he waved. Even the satyrs who served Nico and Will didn't seem all that thrilled to be doing so. This whole place feels like my soul, Nico joked to Will. You know, empty and dark. Will swallowed some chicken kebab pieces. You're not empty, he said, then pointed the skewer at Nico. You are definitely dark, though. Dark as the pits of the underworld. Will looked down, focusing on his food like it was the most interesting thing he'd ever seen. We don't have to talk about it if you don't want to, said Nico. Will managed to smile. His warmth was genuine, like it always was, since he was basically a literal ray of sunshine. And it softened Nico, just a bit. We can, he said. Just maybe not now, Nico. Austin and Kayla just left. The camp is calm, serene, quiet. Let's just appreciate the break, okay? Nico nodded, but he wasn't sure how he was supposed to do what Will had requested. When had he ever gotten a break before? If it wasn't dead Roman emperors, it was his father, or Minos, or his stepmother, Persephone. It had been years since that particular incident had happened. But he was still annoyed about being turned into a dandelion. A dandelion. It was an affront to his aesthetic. And there were other things he didn't want to remember. Darker things. Ghosts who would probably visit him eventually. Nico stuffed it all down, making a grumpy little ball of darkness inside his chest. Then he forced a smile. As he listened to Will talk about all the things they could do that fall while they stayed at camp. It would be fine. Everything would be fine. Chapter 2. It always came rushing back to Nico in his dreams. When he'd first confessed to Will that he was hearing a particularly haunted voice from the underworld, Nico worried he shouldn't have said anything. Sometimes, Will didn't seem to understand what it meant for Nico to be, well, Nico. The underworld spooked Will, to be frank, but Nico needed to tell someone what was happening to him. Months earlier, Nico had sensed his friend Jason Grace's death, which had sent him into a tailspin of grief and rage. By the time Lester and Meg had arrived at Camp Half-Blood at the start of summer, Nico's emotions were so volatile that he'd raised the dead more than once by accident. There is nothing more disconcerting than waking in the morning and finding a freshly incarnated zombie standing over you, ready to take your breakfast order. Will had listened to him attentively, like he always did. Afterward, he'd posed a few questions, mostly about whether the voice had anything to do with the flashbacks Nico had also been having lately. Will had stayed quiet for a while and then asked, "Are you sure it's not post-traumatic stress disorder?" Sometimes Nico's brain thought of a joke and it came out of his mouth a second later without any sort of filter at all. That's exactly what happened when he blurted out, "My whole life is a disorder." Will hadn't laughed at that. Instead, he'd suggested that maybe Nico should talk to Mr. D. For all Dionysus' faults, he was an Olympian god with experience in these matters, dreams, visions, and altered states of consciousness. He's also the god of madness, Nico thought. He tried not to dwell on that or the implications of Will making such a suggestion. "I'd rather do almost anything else," Nico countered. "Can the guy even make it through a single conversation without sarcasm, an insult, or a combination of the two?" Will grinned. "Can you?" Nico had spent the rest of the day trying to recover from Will murdering him with those two words. Still, there is some truth to what Will had said. This wasn't the first time Nico had dealt with flashbacks or PTSD. He remembered coaching his sister, Hazel Levesque, through her own devastating flashbacks after she'd spent time in the underworld. He'd even had a frank conversation with Reina Avila Ramirez Arellano about post-traumatic stress and how it related to the memories of her father. Yet, he'd never really turned that gaze inward. Was he dealing with the same kind of thing? Honestly, how could he not be? But he was sure the voice was something else. After dinner on the day he'd confided to Will, Nico got up the nerve to speak with Mr. D. He told the director about his flashbacks during the day, the repetitive dreams, the voice from deep within Tartarus. He did not, however, tell Mr. D the details of the Oracle's prophecy. That still felt too raw, too personal for a first conversation. Mr. D sat back in his deck chair, turning his can of Diet Coke in his fingers. With his unkempt black hair, blotchy complexion, and wrinkled leopard pattern camp shirt, Dionysus looked more like a hungover Vegas conventioneer than a god. To Nico's surprise, Mr. D didn't tell him to go away or make any snarky comment at Nico's expense. "We need to get to the bottom of this." Mr. D's violet eyes were unsettling, like crystallized wine or blood. "I want to see you each morning at breakfast. You are to report on your dreams and keep me apprised if anything new comes up." The ball of darkness in Nico's chest pressed against his stomach. He would have preferred Mr. D being dismissive and rude. Seeing the god so serious was disturbing. "Every day?" he asked. "Are you sure that's necessary?" "Believe me, Nico D'Angelo, I'd rather not have my breakfast spoiled with your silly mortal problems, but yes, it is necessary if you'd like to keep your consciousness intact. And try to have some interesting dreams, will you? Not the usual boring, 'I was flying, I was being chased, I was singing on stage in my underwear' tripe." So it had become a routine. Mr. D talked to Nico each morning, the god's plate piled high with sausage and eggs, while Nico's was usually empty except for a few strawberries. That too concerned Mr. D, who, as the god of festivity, disapproved of anyone not enjoying food. "I know you've got the whole gaunt and pale son of Hades thing going on, but you're still human. You need to eat." Nico shrugged. "I guess I'm used to being hungry. Doesn't really bother me." Mr. D grunted. "But your appetite is getting worse, along with the flashbacks and the voice in your dreams. It's nothing I can't handle." Nico insisted. Mr. D pushed his plate away. He turned his whole body toward Nico. "Look here, boy. After living in exile at Camp Half-Blood all these wretched years, I've learned that you mortals are surprisingly resilient." "Exactly," Nico began. Mr. D held up a hand. "I'm not done."
You may be resilient, but you're still human. There is no need to punish yourself with hunger just because it's what you're used to. For your mind to heal, your body must also. Nico grumbled, then his stomach followed with some grumbling of its own. Some days, Nico couldn't share his dreams with Mr. D. They were too painful, too vicious, dredging up old memories he didn't want to examine. But other times, Nico had to admit that talking helped. He found that he didn't have to sugarcoat anything with Dionysus. The same crudeness he'd found annoying in the camp director was actually really helpful when Nico was recounting his flashbacks. "My goodness," Mr. D once said after Nico described a spate of dreams that had less to do with singing in his underwear and more to do with simultaneously being burned, drowned, and crushed inside a giant bronze vase filled with ants. "That's marvelous. I must remember to give my worst enemies that nightmare." But none of the talks got to the heart of the matter. Why were these visions happening to Nico? Did he deserve them? Chapter 3. On the night after Kayla and Austin left, Nico stayed awake long after Will had retired to Apollo's cabin. His mind was still buzzing, and he was dreading sleep. Demigods always had vivid and occasionally prophetic dreams. But when he slept, the voice became almost unbearable. "Help me, please," it called out. "I need you, Nico D'Angelo. I need you." Well, so did every ghost who visited him. The dead just wanted to be heard, especially if they hadn't been listened to during their time on Earth. The underworld was full of souls wandering the fields of Asphodel, crying out for attention. But this voice wasn't dead. It felt farther away than even Asphodel and more tortured than any ghosts. This voice was calling out from Tartarus, the darkest and deepest area of the underworld. And nobody called out from Tartarus. It had to be Bob the Titan. Nico remembered their first meeting, Christmas Day nearly 3 years ago, when Nico, Percy Jackson, and Talia Grace were tasked by Persephone to retrieve Hades' missing sword. To do so, they'd had to battle Iapetus, a Titan unleashed from the depths of Tartarus. The Titan might have killed all three of them, but with the last of his strength, Percy had pulled Iapetus into the river Lethe, wiping him of all his memories. Then Percy renamed him Bob and convinced the Titan they were good friends. Strangely, the new identity stuck. Nico had visited Bob several times since then, down in the underworld. The newly gentle Titan had taken a janitorial job in Hades' palace and seemed quite happy to spend his time sweeping up bones and dusting sarcophagi. He and Nico struck up a strange friendship. Both felt disconnected from their pasts, uncomfortable around others, and melancholy about their mutual friend, Percy Jackson, who never seemed to remember they existed. Then, a year and a half ago, Percy and Annabeth had fallen into Tartarus. Bob had sensed their peril and plunged into the abyss to help them. He had held off an army of monsters to give Percy and Annabeth a chance to return to the mortal world. No one was sure what happened to Bob after that, whether he had died or somehow survived. But almost every day, for the last 3 years, Nico had thought about Bob. He felt guilty. They should have saved him. Someone should have rescued him from Tartarus. How could they have just left him there after he'd saved Percy and Annabeth and, well, pretty much the entire world? Maybe Will and Mr. D were right. Maybe Bob's voice was a false echo, a manifestation of Nico's own PTSD. But that didn't explain the prophecy. That's what Nico was thinking about when sleep finally came for him. Nico was in darkness. What else was new? He'd had this dream so many times he thought he knew where it was leading. Except,
Not this night. In the void, Nico heard his name. Nico. A different voice than before, but so familiar. Caro, Nicolo. He stirred as shadows wrapped around him. No one ever called him Nicolo. No one except Nicolo Vita Mia. The shadows pressed tighter against his face. He couldn't breathe. He hadn't heard that voice in years, decades. Mama, I'm here. He tried to call out. Please don't go. Vita Mia, she repeated. Devi ascoltarmi. Nico struggled to understand what she was saying. He was Italian, yes. This was his native language, but his mind moved sluggishly, as if the darkness had seeped into his skull. Finally, the meaning came to him. I am listening, Mama, he answered. He thrashed, trying to free himself from the thick cocoon of shadows. Ascolta, the voice cried. Listen. Nico fell. He plummeted into a soft, warm nest of blankets. Was he back in his bunk at camp? He sat up and... light! On a lacquered brown nightstand, an ugly steel desk lamp cast a yellow glow over an oddly familiar room. Thick, blackout curtains, a flat-screen TV, striped gold and cream wallpaper like gilded prison bars. Wait. No, was this? He grabbed a laminated card from the nightstand. Lotus Hotel and Casino. In-room breakfast options. No. No, no, no. He turned slowly in the gigantic king-size bed, remembering how the mattress made hollow, tinny creaks whenever he moved. He sensed her before he saw her, asleep in the bed next to him. His sister, Bianca. She looked so peaceful there, her chest rising slowly with her breath, her dark hair fanned across her pillow. Nico tried to open his mouth, tried to call to her, but his voice didn't work. There was something poking out from the edge of the duvet at Bianca's shoulder. Was that her quiver? Nico ripped back the covers and saw that his sister was dressed as if ready for battle, complete with boots, jacket, and arrows. This was all wrong. Bianca hadn't become a hunter of Artemis until after their time in the Lotus Casino. Then she'd taken the pledge and left Nico for the last time. If he could just warn her, keep her from making those choices. Wake up! He tried to yell, but his lips wouldn't open. His right hand flew up to his mouth, fear curdled in his stomach. He bolted out of bed, tripping as his legs tangled in the duvet, and then staggered into the harsh fluorescent light of the bathroom. He braced his hands on the makeup mirror. Once his eyes adjusted, Nico wanted to scream, but he couldn't. He literally had no mouth. Beneath his nose, where his lips had been, was a pale line of scar tissue. This is a dream, he told himself. A dream. Wake up, wake up, wake up. His terrified, marred reflection continued to stare back at him. For the thousandth time, Nico wished he had inherited Hades' dream magic. Then he could control what he saw. He would already be awake. He could tell Will or Mr. D about his nightmares, downplay their importance, and revert to being in denial about the voice from Tartarus. That would be so much easier. Instead, he stumbled back into the room. The bed was now empty. Bianca, where did you go? But he couldn't yell it. He couldn't say anything. Nico took another step toward the bed and plunged through the floor. Again he fell. This time, when he landed, he smacked against something very solid. The air rushed out of his lungs, and he opened his eyes to find himself looking at sky. Bright blue sky framed by rows of steel. Suspension cables. What? He thought. Where am I? His hands pushed against the surface beneath him. It was warm and scratchy. Asphalt. A road. Then he saw the cars on either side of him.
Nico scrambled to his feet in a panic, certain that he was about to be run over. But the cars remained still. He hesitantly approached one and was further confused to discover that the driver's seat was empty. All the cars seemed deserted, two frozen lines of traffic, and in the distance, the Manhattan skyline. The wind buffeted Nico's clothes. The asphalt swayed gently, while above him the gray-blue metal support cables thrummed like giant guitar strings. Pedestrian paths on either side of the road were blocked off with dull red barriers. But there were no people anywhere. Far below, the East River rippled in the sunlight. "Okay, Dream," he muttered to himself. "Why am I on a New York City bridge?" As soon as he said it, Nico had two realizations. First, he could talk again. His mouth was no longer fused shut. Second, this was the Williamsburg Bridge. "Oh no," he thought. "No, I won't relive this day." There was a roar behind Nico and his blood ran cold. He turned and saw the impossible. The figure was tall and golden, but not in an attractive way like Will, more in an unnatural, terrifying, "I'm going to kill you" sort of way. He stood 9 feet tall with a cruel, ageless face, molten gold eyes, and shining armor. In his hands gleamed an enormous scythe. Kronos. "This doesn't make sense." Nico edged back, his pulse racing as the Titan strode toward him, a horde of monsters and allied demigods at his back. Dreams rarely made sense, but this one. Nico hadn't even been on the Williamsburg Bridge during the Battle of Manhattan. He'd only heard how Percy had collapsed the center of the bridge to keep Kronos' invasion at bay. Kronos locked his eyes on Nico. The Titan smiled hideously, as if he could read Nico's thoughts. He raised his scythe. "No!" Nico turned to run toward Manhattan, away from Kronos' advancing army. But they stood in his way. Percy, Michael Yu, Annabeth. Will, looking so much younger and so terrified. Nico froze, trapped between the lines of battle. The bridge swayed beneath him. "This isn't real," Nico told himself. "I'm not here." "Listen." Percy stepped forward, forcing Nico back in Kronos' direction. "Percy, what is this?" Nico held up his hands defensively. "What are you doing?" "You have to listen," said Michael Yu, his intense brown eyes brimming with tears. "If you don't, you will share my fate." "Ominous much?" Nico snarled. He spun around, but Kronos was nearly on top of him, wielding the scythe like a guillotine blade. "Listen," commanded the Titan. "I am." Nico was furious. "Whoever's trying to reach me, just tell me what you want." Kronos' scythe hurtled toward his face. Nico was in darkness. Again. By this point, he was just irritated. A person could only take so much terror and misery before it started to get really annoying. This weird dream jumping through memories and events seemed so unnecessary. "I get the message," he thought. "I will listen. Isn't that good enough?" A light appeared, soft and purple. "What the?" Nico grabbed his Stygian iron sword and let its glow illuminate his surroundings. He was wedged into an egg-shaped space barely large enough to hold him. The gleaming metallic walls were cool to the touch. In front of him, etched into the bronze, were 3 long hash marks. "No," he said aloud, and the sound of his own voice echoed back at him. "You've got to be kidding me." Nico's dream had taken him back to the jar that the giants Ephialtes and Otis had stuffed him into, so he could serve as bait for the 7 demigods of the prophecy. It was, all things considered, not exactly Nico's favorite memory. "Here?" Nico called out. "Why are you making me relive this?" He shut his eyes and smacked the side of his head. Wake up, Nico, wake up! He opened his eyes again. He was still in the jar, and there, at his feet, was one lone pomegranate seed. His stomach contracted. Panic swelled in his throat. He remembered his endless hours in this jar, racked with hunger and thirst, wondering how long he could hold out before eating that pomegranate seed, his last bit of sustenance.
Hey, subconscious, said Nico. If you're trying to get me to realize something, this is a terrible way to go about it.
He was met with silence. Suddenly, a terrible screeching sound filled the vessel as the lid was pried open. Harsh light spilled in. Nico winced and covered his eyes. This hadn't happened in the real world. The jar hadn't been opened until it tipped over, just before the fight with Ephialtes and Otis. Nico tried to uncover his eyes, but the light above was still too bright. Given the strange logic of this dream ride, you wouldn't have been surprised if Cookie Monster appeared over the mouth of the jar, reached inside, and gobbled up Nico like the chocolate chip cookie he was. Cookie Monster did not, in fact, show up. Percy Jackson did. Nico gazed up into Percy's face, which was framed by tousled black hair. His green eyes looked stormy, his mouth twisted down in concern. There was a time when just the thought of Percy had made Nico feel an intense pit of desire in his gut. It was an unrequited desire. Of course, because Percy was never going to have the same feelings for Nico. It had torn up Nico for a long, long time. After a while, though, he became used to the idea that he wanted things he couldn't have. Percy, Bianca, his mother. Stability. It was all the same. Getting over Percy was easier than Nico expected. What was one straight boy when you spent your whole life longing for the impossible? As bizarre as this dream was, the sight of Percy was comforting to Nico. He missed his friend and was eager to get out of this stupid jar. He remembered how frail and sickly he'd been when Piper had rescued him in real life. This time felt just as difficult. He tried to entangle his stiff legs and stand so Percy could help pull him out. The other demigods must have defeated Otis and Ephialtes already. Nico couldn't hear anything outside the confines of his bronze prison. Nico reached up to take Percy's hand, but Percy was now farther away. Even standing with his arms outstretched, Nico couldn't reach the mouth of the jar. Nico looked down, and his heart leaped into his throat. Either that pomegranate seed had swollen to the size of an apple, or Nico was shrinking. He cast another glance at Percy. No, no. His friend was even farther away. The mouth of the jar now seemed like a skylight at the top of a cathedral's dome, and Percy was the size of a titan, peeking in to see what the little mortals were up to. Percy reached in with his gigantic hand. Nico jumped high, desperate to grab hold of one of Percy's fingers, but he just kept shrinking smaller and smaller, the walls of the jar looming around him. Stop it! Nico cried out. Percy pulled his hand out of the jar. His face disappeared for a few seconds. When it returned, his eyes were red and glassy. He was crying. Nico, he said. Nico, listen. Nico wanted to scream.
I have literally been doing nothing else.
His voice came out tinny and high-pitched, like he'd sucked down the helium from a million balloons. It only sounded worse as it echoed throughout the jar.
You have to go, Percy said.
Nico's heart seemed to be shrinking at a slower rate than his rib cage. It pressed against his sternum, hammering with each beat.
Go where?
He asked, though he dreaded the answer.
We made a mistake, said Percy. You have to fix it.
The jar shattered. Again, Nico fell.